Hello, this is Esperanza Phoenix, and welcome to Unpacking Life's Crazy, a podcast about a lifetime of unfortunate, unusual, and enlightening experiences, and how some of us use humor and hope to survive mental illness. In our podcast, we discuss controversial and adult topics. We are all adults here. There will be swearing. When I recorded today's pod, the theme was strange journeys. After recording, I listened through and I realized that all of the stories have one really cool thing in common, which I hadn't even considered. They are all about the kindness of strangers. So I had to change the title of the pod, and you will see why. Thank you for joining us today and enjoy the podcast. I'd like to start by apologizing that it took me a little while to get this pod out. I mentioned at the end of the last pod that a dear friend of mine had passed, and as it turned out, it hit me a little harder than I expected. Mountain took the ultimate journey, and we will all miss him, and this podcast just happens to be about strange journeys. My experience with strange journeys began when I was very little. As I've mentioned in other pods, my weekends were spent with my father traveling the powwow circuit throughout California, New Mexico, Arizona, basically the Southwest, anywhere where powwows were. I remember one powwow in particular that we hit regularly was the Jim Thorpe Memorial Powwow. Traveling to powwows was a very unique journey. They would all start out basically the same, which was loading all of his jewelry and paintings and artwork and our tables and our camping supplies and anything we might need while we were there into his large green van. For some reason, he really liked to buy these dark green vans, which were extremely hot inside, by the way. And we did not have air conditioning. That was a luxury that he absolutely could not afford. So a lot of times the only air conditioning we had in the hot summers was to get a handkerchief. He always had those, you know, they're like red or blue or whatever. His were usually red and they have a pattern on them. And he would have water, sometimes ice water, in the van with us. And you would pour the water onto this handkerchief. You'd wring it out. Then you'd roll your window all the way down, open the door slightly, flip the end of the handkerchief up over the top of the door, and then close it. So when the air came through the window, it would blow the cool air onto you as you sat in your seat cooking. Because believe me, traveling through California, New Mexico, and Arizona in the summertime is no fun in the heat when you're in a dark colored van with no air conditioning. But that is what we did. And there were a lot of interesting events that took place at these powwows. But a couple of the most memorable was the one time that I got lost. Now, I have to make a caveat here. My father, in many ways, was not a very good person. And he certainly wasn't an attentive parent while we were at these events. I remember this event taking place when I was about 6 years old, and I was the only other person in attendance with him at these things. So he would either have me watch the booth by myself when he went off to do whatever he needed to do, or sometimes he would be manning the booth and he would send me on errands. Like I would go to purchase food or water, or maybe I just needed to use the bathroom. So I would have to go by myself to do these things. Some of these powwows were massive. One of them I know took place at Cal Expo. So if you've ever been to Cal Expo, you have some understanding of how large the area was. And then that's filled with booths and people and vendors. And then you've got the central area where people are dancing and the drummers. And it's a really, really big place. And for a six-year-old, yeah, it's no wonder I grew up to have some anxiety issues. So I remember one time I found myself wandering through the aisles of booths and I could not find my way back. I was starting to get frantic because I knew I'd been gone a long time, and my father was like, you go do what you need to do and you come right back so I don't have to worry. And so I was getting afraid, one, because I was lost, I couldn't find my way back, and two, because I was afraid I was going to get in trouble if I finally did get back, because I was lost. I didn't know how long I'd been gone. So I'm frantically now running between the booths and trying to see if there's something familiar. And if you've ever panicked, the more worried you get, the harder it is for you to recognize things and process stuff. So I was starting to freak out. And I ran straight into a pair of very thick legs wearing chaps. And just bam. And I look up and there is this massive biker dude. He was huge. He was wearing jeans and chaps and a t-shirt and like a leather vest. And he had a big bushy beard and sunglasses and everything. And he bends down over me and looks right in my face and says, are you lost? Let me help you go up to the announcer so they can find your parents, okay? And, you know, he's a little scary, but he pointed in the direction of the drummer and the announcers and stuff. He says, we're going to go over there. We're going to talk to them. And who are you here with? And I said, I'm here with my dad. Okay, well, let's go have the announcer call him up so you can find your dad. You know, what was I going to do? Okay, but I was terrified too, because here they were going to announce me and my dad was going to have to come get me. And that wasn't good either. So this giant biker guy leads me to the announcer people and he talks to the MC guy and says, okay, this is what's going on. And the guy gets, you know, they stop the drumming and he goes on to the loudspeaker and he calls to my father, you know, your daughter's up here at the announcement booth. Can you please come and get her? And I waited. And the biker man was really sweet and really nice, very concerned about me and the announcer. Everybody was very friendly, but I was scared because I got lost. And that's the kind of thing that I would get the belt for. So I was afraid. And my father showed up absolutely furious, ready to lay into me. And he comes stomping up there with this look on his face, just ready to, you know, he's looking right at me. And that biker stepped in between us and said, you had better keep a better eye on your daughter. She has no business wandering around here all by herself. If I see her by herself at this powwow again, you're going to have to talk to me. And my father just about like crumpled. He couldn't say anything. He couldn't hit me. He couldn't do anything. And he just shut his mouth, took my hand, and walked us back to the booth. And I was so grateful to that big biker guy. I have no idea who he was, but he was the sweetest man. And years later, in Angels Camp where I lived, every year they would have the county fair and the Jumping Frog Jubilee. And one of the things that would take place is over that weekend, there was a biker day where the bikers would come and camp out and they would come to the fair. And I remember I was planning on taking my children to the fair and my grandmother heard we were going. She's like, well, you just be careful because there's those bikers all over the place. And, you know, those bikers. And I just wanted to say, Grandma, you have no idea how I feel about bikers. Never, ever judge a book by their cover, even if it's a big old scary biker looking guy, because they might just turn out to be the sweetest person you've ever met. My journeys became considerably more harrowing as I grew older. By the time I was 16, I had graduated early, started taking some college classes, been kicked out of the house, joined live theater. And I had fallen head over heels in love with this funny, talented, beautiful man named Ronald. And Ronald just happened to be Jamaican Canadian. No, he was not African American, though that was the term at the time. He His family had immigrated from Jamaica to Canada, and then he had moved with his family from Canada to Fresno, and he had wound up at the junior college doing theater where I was. Well, many events happened, and he had to go back to Canada. I was a lovesick teenager and decided I was going to follow him to Winnipeg, Canada. Yeah. Now, keep in mind, when I was 16, GPS wasn't a thing. No, we didn't have GPS. And we didn't have cell phones. Not to mention, I wasn't exactly wealthy. So I decided to load what I wanted into the little Datsun that I had. And with $25 to my name, headed for Winnipeg, Manitoba by myself. So all I had was some water for the road and some no-dos, which were caffeine pills. So hopefully I wouldn't sleep on the way. The last stop I had made was with a friend of mine who happened to live in Sacramento. So I left her home in Sacramento and started driving and driving and driving and listening to the radio and listening to my tapes. And I was getting more and more tired and more fatigued. And California's a big state. I learned that right away. California's a big state. And I find myself at the top of Mount Shasta. And I'm tired and scared that I might not be able to do this. And how am I going to make it through? And I kind of had a little bit of a breakdown in the back parking lot of a fast food place at 2 a.m. I had myself a good cry, freaked out a little bit, and said, nope, I'm going to do this. I've got to do this. I'm going to do it. I don't know how I'm going to do this by myself, but damn, I'm going to do it. So started up my car, put myself together, and go to get back on to the highway. And as I'm going up the on-ramp, there's a guy hitchhiking there. Now you're thinking, oh my God, worst thing ever. But I looked at him and I thought, he really looks like he could use a ride. And he actually looks like he's about my age. And my gut said, pick him up. And I said, okay. And I pull over and I pick up this guy. I believe his name was Jason. And it turned out that Jason was just a year older than me. And he was hitchhiking back to his sister's place in Oregon. And he said, you know, hi, we start talking. We had a good conversation. He told me about, you know, we got to know each other as we were driving. After a while, I was really, really just exhausted. And I said, you know what, I'm going to have to pull over in this rest stop so we can get some rest. And I can't drive anymore. I'm too tired. He said, okay. So we pull into this rest stop and I use the restroom, come back out. And I get as comfortable as I can in the driver's seat, the seat back, and I grab one of the pillows and stuff. And I look over and Jason is sitting there. And I was like, are you okay? Are you going to get some sleep? And he said, no, I don't know. It seems a little shady here. So I was thinking that I will just sit up and watch and you can get some sleep. And then I'll sleep when you're driving. And that's what he did. He watched over me while I slept for 4 or 5 hours. And then we got to driving again. And he was a really, really sweet guy. Just nice. When we eventually made it to his sister's place, he said, you know what? I'm just going to go in and drop off my stuff and grab a few things. And then I'll ride with you the rest of the way. And I said, are you kidding? That's like a whole nother state. And he's like, it's no big deal. I don't mind hitchhiking back. You could use the company. And he went into the house. He dropped off some stuff, grabbed a few things, grabbed a little bit of cash, I guess, and then came back out. And he rode with me all the way to the border of Canada. And it was just one of the sweetest. Sorry. I've said before, I get choked up easy. It was one of the sweetest things. He didn't have to do that. And yet he decided to travel with me and keep me company. And when I dropped him off and I called my boyfriend to tell him where my progress was on the journey, he just about flipped out. He's like, oh my God, you picked up a horned hitchhiker. What if he murdered you? Oh my gosh. I'm like, no, Jason was a cool dude. He was fine. But the journey didn't end there, of course. I got to the border of Victoria, and then I had across several provinces then to get to Winnipeg, Manitoba. And I remember being at the top of this mountain in some national forest somewhere. I found a campground there, and it was, it wasn't like you had to pay to get in to use the bathroom area or whatever, but I hadn't showered in days. It was disgusting. So I went into this deserted campground and used their shower facility. That was probably the scariest shower I have ever taken in my life. I mean, it appeared to be deserted. I didn't see anybody anywhere around, but here I am in the forest in the dark, away from everyone and everything, showering completely naked in some weird campground somewhere. You wind up having visions of Psycho and stuff when you're in that kind of a situation. When I got back on the road, I was really, really tired at this point, because after I got to the border and without Jason there watching over me at rest stops, I was kind of afraid to just pull over and sleep. And I'm coming down this stretch of four-lane highway in the darkness. It's pouring rain. And apparently I fell asleep. And I woke up drifting across the highway towards an embankment. I don't even know how far the drop-off was. And I just I was really awake then because I scared the crap out of myself. I finally get down the mountain and I just needed to hear a friendly voice. I needed to check in. And at the bottom of the hill, there was some old restaurant that looked like it had been shut down for ages, but there was a payphone out front. Yeah, that's what you did back then. You didn't have a cell phone. You had to go to a payphone and you had to do that. So I get to the payphone and it had a little glass booth around it, but the glass was broken because of the light in the little glass booth. It had attracted all sorts of moths and giant creepy crawlies. So I am there in the middle of the night in this tiny booth filled with bugs, just so many bugs. I grew up on a ranch. I'm not grossed out by bugs, but there were a lot of bugs and they kept getting on me. And I had to call Ronald from this payphone to say, I'm okay, but I almost crashed. I was a wreck. It seemed like between that point when I finally made it to Winnipeg and finally got to see Ronald, it happened a lot quicker. I remember finally getting there and meeting him at a donut place and just being so relieved to be off the road and so relieved to be there. That adventure lasted a couple of months being in Winnipeg because, hey, I didn't have a permit to work in Canada and I was technically a minor. So by November, I needed to go home and I had to go crying to my mother, the mother who had kicked me out, who I didn't have a great relationship with, but what was I going to do? I didn't feel capable of driving the car all the way back to California in the winter through all the snow and bad weather and everything else. It had already frozen up in Canada. And Canada is weird. I'm used to Sierra snow, which is this big fluffy stuff, and it just kind of drifts from the sky. No, that's not what the snow is like in Winnipeg, Manitoba. The first time it snowed, I was like, what is this? They said, oh, it's snow. No, this is not snow. It was like tiny little ice crystals that blew against you like a sandblaster. And you really could just get frostbite being outside. I'm a California girl. I didn't know about frostbite. Man, it was cold. So I had to call my mother and she sent me a Greyhound bus ticket. I didn't have a choice. I had to get on a Greyhound bus and head all the way back to California. That was one of the longest trips ever. Even longer than the drive, because now it was just me in a suitcase on a bus with some seriously creepy people. I had to move to the front of the bus because some guy was pleasuring himself in the back seat when I was back there. So I moved up to the front to the bus driver. And I remember going through Nebraska and the snow was coming down so thick. I don't know how the bus driver could see out the window because it was like this sheet of white hit the front window. The windshield wipers pushed it away and you could see about 4 feet in front of the bus on the road with the headlights. You could just like barely see the road. And then whoop, the window was completely covered again. And then the wipers would come on. It was terrifying. I have no idea how the bus driver even knew where he was going. And by that time, I had all of maybe $2 to my name. I had like nothing. It was a very hungry bus ride. But there was a sweet, sweet old man. We stopped at this one bus stop and it had a lunch counter. And back then, they would serve soup and stuff, and you could like get the saltine crackers and stuff were kept with the salt and pepper and ketchup and things like that. And so I went and grabbed myself some saltine crackers because that was going to be my lunch. And this sweet, sweet old man said, "Hey, let me buy you lunch." And I didn't refuse. Oh my gosh, some of the best sandwiches I ever had in my life. I was so, so hungry. And then I remember the bus stopped in Butte, Montana. You know what's in Butte, Montana? I don't know what's there now, but at the time, absolutely nothing. It was this Nowheresville. It was this tiny bus station. There was nothing else. And the next bus wasn't leaving for like 8 hours. So I had to stay in this sad little bus station for 9 hours. This guy there had packed himself a lunch. He shared an apple with me. It was very nice of him. And I had to go crawling back home. That was a very defeated return. We're going to take a moment for a word about our sponsor, Mooch's Munchies, a wonderful pet treat company in Las Vegas, Nevada. If you aren't in Nevada, don't worry. Mooch's Munchies will ship their delightful homemade treats throughout the United States. They are a full-service, health-conscious pet company that offers high-end foods for dogs and cats for the purpose of treating food like medicine while still being fun. If you have dogs or cats with sour tummies, weight issues, or who are prone to pancreatitis problems, Mooch's Munchies has a solution that is simple, real food, gluten-free, no chemicals, preservatives, and no fine print. Mooch's Munchies wants all of our pets to live as long a happy life as possible. Each cookie is made with passion for puppy-pleasing perfection, and it shows in the reaction that they get from their devoted fans. We hope that your fur babies will agree and become part of the Mooch's Munchies family too. Both of my dogs absolutely love their Mooch's Munchies treats. One more thing I'd like to say about Mooch's Munchies. When the pandemic hit, Kelly, one of the owners, used to work as a seamstress, and she started making the most wonderful reusable face masks. They've got pet-friendly prints on them. They're just delightful. I have some myself. They work really well and they're very comfortable. Please check out their pet products and also consider ordering a mask. They donate a portion of every sale to their local pet rescue. So go check them out at moochesmunchies.com. That's moochesmunchies.com. And tell them you heard about them on Unpacking Life's Crazy. So I guess probably one of the craziest strange journeys I've ever taken was when I decided to move to Costa Rica. Now, my first husband and I, my children's father, we've been separated but living in the same house for some time. My mother and soon-to-be stepfather had invited the children and I to visit Costa Rica. It was lovely there. I was a massage therapist and I thought, you know what? I got to start over somewhere. Let's start over in Costa Rica. My mother and stepfather were moving there and we had mended our relationship a little bit by then. And I said, okay, that's what I'm going to do. So I decided to go ahead of the kids because I didn't speak any Spanish. Well, I shouldn't say I didn't speak any Spanish. I spoke the Spanish that I had learned on Sesame Street, and that was about it. So I wanted to learn some Spanish and familiarize myself a little bit more with the country. And so I left 2 weeks ahead of my children, and my mother and soon-to-be stepfather were going to bring them later. Each of us had 2 suitcases, and additionally, I had my massage table. And I got on the plane, and as soon as the plane took off, I thought, holy fuck, what am I doing? This is completely insane. Am I insane? I'm insane. I just left behind everything I've ever known to move to a country that I know very little about. And I'm going to be honest, before I took the vacation with my mom and stepdad, I didn't even know that Costa Rica wasn't an island. Yeah. So I figured it all out, and I decided to take a Spanish immersion course. Costa Rica has lots of opportunities for taking immersion courses, but this particular immersion course was in Arenal, near the volcano. And it actually started out in San Jose. So we spent a couple nights in San Jose in like this youth hostel, got to look around San Jose a little bit. That was interesting. Got to go to, they have a really big outdoor market there, which was interesting. And as we're doing this, we're learning a little bit of Spanish with our guides because it's sort of like adventure and language. So after we spent some time in San Jose, we went ahead and took the bus up to Arenal. The way it works is they put you up in the home of some Costa Ricans who don't necessarily speak English. That's the whole point. It's total immersion. But the people who ran the organization just assumed by my age that I had a little bit of basic Spanish. So they put me in this class with some 20-somethings college students. And I sat there the first day completely lost because they don't give you any translation. Everything is done completely in Spanish and you have to kind of figure it out. They don't, it's immersion. It's not like, okay, this word means this and that word means that. It's a different thing. And I said, you know, this is not going to work for me. I am completely lost. I don't know what's going on. I don't speak enough Spanish to even just like figure out what's going on. And they said, well, we do have another class, you know, a less advanced group that you can be in. I said, okay, let's do that. Well, this less advanced group turned out to be 2 really, really sweet teenagers from somewhere in the Midwest. And I can't even remember how the 2 of them wound up at this particular thing, but I think they were 14, 15 years old. And the boy had a terrible crush on this girl who had been his best friend for years, but they were a couple of sweet kids. And I actually had a really great time hanging out with them and counseling him on how to talk to her and like explain how we felt and how to accept it if she didn't feel the same way. It was the whole thing. But, we did a tour of a bat cave, which was really cool. We did a rafting trip, which was very exciting. We got to see monkeys in the trees and everything else. One of the weirdest things I saw on this trip, and okay, you're probably not even going to believe me when I tell you this, because like I said, it was incredibly bizarre. We would walk from wherever our host house was to the place where the classes were being given. And one of the mornings I'm walking from the host house and I hear a dog yelping, and I'm always an animal lover. So I look around to see, you know, why is this dog yelping? Is there something that I could do to maybe help? And it was not something that I was in any way prepared to help with. What I witnessed was apparently a female dog in heat. A male had tried to mate with her and was clearly not very good at this because he had somehow managed to get one of his back legs inserted into her, and he was turned and twisted around so that his back foot was stuck into the female dog's vagina, and they were attached together in this absolutely bizarre predicament. He didn't seem to mind too much. He was kind of like panting, ha, 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 whatever. And she was kind of freaking out because another dog had his paw stuck inside of her. And I'm looking at this and I didn't know what to do. And some Costa Ricans walked by and I looked at them and I was like, indicated the dogs like what to do. And they just laughed and ignored it. And I was like, okay. So I went on to class very confused, and I pulled aside one of the instructors, which I knew also spoke English, and I explained to them what I had witnessed. And they're like, huh, yeah, I don't know. Okay, that was weird. And I explained what I had seen to a couple of my classmates. I said, how does that even happen? Is there an animal control people or somebody who can call, who can figure out if these dogs got separated or what happened here? They all thought I was just kind of crazy or making shit up, I'm sure. that just sounds completely insane. And then the next day I come to class, and one of the other people in the program, this girl runs up to me and she's like, oh my God, I saw them. I saw what you were talking about. I didn't believe you. It is so weird. They were by the bus stop. Same dogs. I hope they eventually got separated. I have no... If any of you folks have ever witnessed anything like that, I encourage you to send me an email, because I'm still baffled by that whole event. No idea how that even happens. I did wind up learning enough Spanish to just scrape by. And then the rest was spending time with people, a lot of sign language, and getting little bits and pieces in order to finally learn the language. After we've been living in Costa Rica, we would still, when we got a chance, take occasional trips. Now, I wasn't wealthy, and I would only get occasional massage work. I wound up meeting a Costa Rican and remarrying. He was a Costa Rican firefighter. And the way the firefighter schedule works there is it's 24 hours on. So they stay at the firehouse for 24 hours, and then they're at home for 24 hours. They do get a couple of vacations throughout the year. But if you want to take a long weekend or do anything that's more than 24 hours, you basically have to swap shifts with somebody, and somebody pulls a double shift. Like that. And since we didn't have a whole lot of money, we wouldn't go off and stay in fancy hotels or get to check out the exciting parts of the country very often. But one of the things that was on my bucket list was to see the turtles lay their eggs. Costa Rica is home to Oceanol Beach, and Oceanol Beach is the second largest sea turtle laying beach in the world. The first largest, last I heard, was in Australia. So we decided that we were going to take a trip with the kids to Oceanol and camp out and see the sea turtles come ashore and lay their eggs. We all piled into my Suzuki Sidekick, all of our camping equipment and all our goodies and stuff and cookies and snacks and whatever for the road. And we drove from where we lived, which was a tiny farming fishing village on the tip of the Nicoya Peninsula called Paquera. It was the hometown of my ex. And we took the inland route. So we headed up through Playa Naranjo and through Nicoya, and we stayed inland. And we got to Oceanol. We had some lovely arroz con mariscos on the beach. That's rice with seafood. It's always a very good dish in Costa Rica if you go. I highly recommend it. Then we needed a place to camp out. Actually, we got invited to camp in somebody's backyard. Costa Ricans are very, very nice if you speak the language. In this case, they got to talking to my ex, whose father happens to be a highway patrol there. And the highway patrol has rather large districts, and I don't even know how they knew. People know people there. It's weird. But anyways, they knew his dad, and they said, hey, you know what? You can camp in our backyard, because then you'll have access to a hose and fresh water and all that. So go ahead. So we set up our tent and we camped in the backyard. And in the wee hours of the night, we got up and we searched for turtles. We walked the beach, and we had chosen a very bad time to come and look for turtles, because the most we saw was some evidence that they had come ashore at some point, because we saw their tracks in the sand. And the next day we saw some evidence of the the shells of the eggs that had been stirred up by crabs and seagulls and stuff, but we didn't actually get to see the turtles lay their eggs. And I was tired and we were all tired. It's like, ugh, whatever. It was kind of a wasted journey, but hey, we went camping and we decided to head back. But since it was kind of a disappointing situation, my ex suggested that we take the scenic route and let's head back along the beach, because then we can stop at various beaches from time to time, get out, play in the waves a little bit. It'll be more interesting than just taking the dusty road back. And that sounded like a good idea. We headed along the coast. Now, be aware, if you travel in Costa Rica and you rent a car, that main roads occasionally, often, go through rivers. This is not an unusual thing. It is a main road. You're not on some side thing. It is a main road, but it doesn't have a bridge. You need to go through the river. And depending on what the weather is like upstream, this could be a scarier thing than at other times. And it just so happened that we came to the river at a time when there must have been a downpour up the mountain. Costa Rica has what they call microclimates. So while it's not very far away, just up the mountain, it can be just a deluge, a downpour going on. And we get to the edge of the river, and a lot of times the way the water pushes the land underneath it, you have to take a kind of convoluted path. Once you go into the river, you have to kind of move one way and then loop around and then come through in order to have solid ground underneath your tires the whole time. We get to the river, we look across, and on the other side are a couple of trucks and other cars that are parked facing the river. And they too are trying to decide, okay, well, how deep is it? What's the best way to traverse this? I don't know. And they're looking and we're looking, and my ex, who was impulsive, says, "You think I can make it?" "I think I can make it." And I said, "I don't know if you can make it." And he gunned the engine and headed in. He couldn't make it. We made it about halfway across that river, and we were too deep. The water started pouring in. My youngest child shrieks and climbs the back seat. I am frantically grabbing anything electronic. At this time, we do have a cell phone and a camera and things of that nature. I am grabbing everything that I can to get it up above the waterline. My ex jumps out the window and grabs a rope that we kept underneath the seat for emergencies, such as this one. And so he jumps out the window with the rope, and my older child, my daughter, follows him out the window. So my ex loops the rope around the front of the bumper and ties it and swims across to the other side. And a very nice man with a truck waiting on the other side ties the rope to the truck, and they pull my Suzuki out of the river. Well, by now, the water has come in up past the seats. Have you ever seen in a TV show where they open the doors and a car full of water? Yeah, it was like that. We get on the shore, I open up the doors, and water comes gushing out of the car. And with it, cookie wrappers and sandals and any other floating items in our luggage. And it all just kind of whooshes out onto the shore of the river. And there we sat. Because if water goes into the motor of a vehicle, it's dead. It's dead. So we're on the side of the river, and my children are making the most of things, playing in the sand and the water, and I'm talking to my husband at the time about what we're going to do next. And so he goes and talks to the guy with the truck, really nice guy. They tie up the car and they haul it up the hill, less than a mile, to where this guy's finca is, his ranch, where he lives with his wife and his daughter. Our car sits in front of their yard, and the kids and I set up the tent and eat some cookies, sitting in a tent behind our car, stuck. We didn't know how we were going to get back home. The car's totally broken. And my ex has gone to talk to his dad to see, member of the highway patrol, knows how to wheel and deal, has lots of friends who are mechanics and that kind of thing. But there's like absolutely no cell service at that house, and they didn't even have a phone. So he has to hike up this mountain so that he can get cell service and reach out to his father. And the kids and I are still sitting there. We probably sat out there for 3 hours. We're running out of water. We didn't have any food. And then the lady at the house comes out, and she's just so, so sweet. She said, come in. Come eat. Let me feed you. It'll be fine. Just come in. So we come inside, and they had a lovely parrot who entertained the children. And she explained to us, she said, oh, you are definitely not the first people to get stranded at our house. We had some lovely tourists from Sweden last year who got stuck here. And their location is in such a way that a river kind of runs on either side of the area. And when it gets a lot of rain up the way, they're basically flooded in on either side. You can't take the road. So now we're trapped in this flooded zone. We couldn't have gotten to the other side and kept going either, even if our car was functioning, because that river was also running high. And luckily, they were just sweet, sweet people. Their eldest daughter was away at college. So she said, okay, well, why don't you two stay in our eldest daughter's room and your kids can sleep in the bunk with our daughter? So we spent the night with them, and my two kids shared a bunk, and their daughter took the lower bunk, and they guess they talked half the night. They had a great time. And the next morning she fed us breakfast. She was so sweet. Then my ex hiked up the way to meet his father, who was coming with the mechanic. When they returned, it was about lunchtime. The woman was so kind. She fed us lunch too. And then the husband piled us all into the back of his truck, and we headed down to see what was going on with our car. Earlier that day, he had helped my ex to tow the car to the nearest business, which was a little soda. They called them sodas instead of cafes. And there was a little bodega that sold chips and things and a little bar. Well, my father-in-law had brought the one-eye mechanic. And a lot of times you identify people in Costa Rica kind of as descriptions. And I don't know what it is with mechanics, but mechanics have some issues. At least they did in our small town. We had three mechanics that I knew. There was the one-eye mechanic who had a patch over his eye. There was the one-legged mechanic. Yeah, he's just missing a leg from the knee down, and he did not have his prosthesis. There was a lot of hopping, and he used a stick when he had to drive a standard transmission car to test it. And then the third mechanic was the crazy eye mechanic, because he had cross-eyed. Again, kind of weird. So he had brought the one-eye mechanic. So the one-eye mechanic had checked out the car right away, which was total crap and was going to need to be completely overhauled. He learned that almost immediately. And once he discovered that there was nothing he could do about the vehicle, he'd headed over to the bar to drink some rum and coke. So we show up. He says, yeah, your car is basically dead. We're going to have to wait until the rivers go down so that it can be towed back to town. And then we're going to have to overhaul the vehicle. Okay, great. Well, the way they had all gotten there is the one-eye mechanic had parked his Jeep on the other side of the river, and they had waded across, and we had to reverse that process to get back to the Jeep. Again, the farmer guy who had his family had let us stay with them, he lets us all pile back into the back of his truck again, and he's driving us to the edge of the river so that we can wade across. And we're all sitting in the back. And he says, hola. And my son doesn't answer. He says, ¿cómo está? He doesn't answer. I was like, don't be rude. Don't be rude. Answer him. You understand. And he gets real quiet. And he says, no, mama. He's a pirate. Because the guy had been drinking rum. He stunk of liquor, and he had a patch over his eye. So it was a logical assumption. So I start to laugh, and I apologize to the mechanic, and I said, I'm sorry. He says, usted eres un pirate. And so he immediately lifts up his eye patch so you can see the nasty gash in his face, and he goes, arr. We made it to the edge of the river. We all stripped down to our skivvies to wade across, got dressed again, and had to take a very long jeep ride back home without our car. It took 3 months before my car was finally repaired, and it was never the same. By the time the river died down and they sent the tow truck over to get my vehicle, it was molded inside, and there were frogs. It's so nasty. It was a complete disaster. So if you're traveling in Costa Rica and you do not want excessive adventure, I would suggest that you hire taxis and take buses and things, because otherwise you may just get more than you bargained for. Now, in case you think that my wild journeys ended when my time in Costa Rica ended, not so. My most recent wild journey, and I am so grateful that we took this trip before coronavirus hit and would have been completely impossible. I mean, we're now banned from Europe. How depressing. Anyways, my boyfriend David, who is awesome, loves to travel just like me, we decided to take a trip to Barcelona and then on to Avignon, France, and this past November. So we traveled over the Thanksgiving holiday, and we spent 10 days in total. I mean, travel is always a great adventure, and I actually have a couple of YouTube videos about our experience in Barcelona and why Christmas is the shit in Catalonia. You'll have to check it out to understand. It's a little hard to explain, but a lot of their Christmas traditions involve poop. Yeah, I know, weird. But from there, we went ahead and flew into France and then took the train up into Avignon. The only time I'd heard of Avignon before planning this trip was, if you ever saw the movie Catch Me If You Can, his parents met in Avignon during the war. That was the story. It is an amazing, beautiful little town. It's just great. It's got like the cobblestone streets, and it's got a wall around it. It used to be the Pope's palace. For some time, the Pope was there and not at the Vatican. Long story. You can look it up if you wish. But there's a wall that goes all around the little city, and the city was built for horses and carriages. It wasn't built for automobiles. Initially, we had planned to go to Avignon and stay in this hotel there for a couple of days, and then we were going to go on to Venice. That was the plan. Unfortunately, the transportation and sanitation workers of France like to go on strike around the holidays, and they decided to go on strike. So that was going to mess up our whole travel plans, and we didn't know, were we going to be able to take the train, or were our flights going to be delayed, what was going to happen. So we did a lot of juggling and trying to figure out what we were going to do. And we decided, you know what, let's just cancel that leg of our journey. Let's juggle things around, and we'll just stay in Avignon for the rest of the trip. And then we can rent a car and kind of journey out of this area and check out a few of the other little villages and wineries and different things that were nearby. And when we'd picked up our car, originally we'd had a smaller car, but it turned out to be a standard transmission. While I can drive a standard transmission, I really didn't want to be dealing with that on these foreign roads in a situation that I wasn't familiar with. So we asked if we could upgrade to an automatic, and they said yes. Okay, so they had upgraded us. Well, they had upgraded us to a sedan. Fine, no big deal. We decided to go to the town of Arles. And Arles is not only a beautiful, wonderful town, it was an inspiring town for Vincent van Gogh. And as an artist myself, I sell my artwork at Esperanza Paints. And if you paint, if you're an artist, if you're into the classics, you know, you have the opportunity to go see some of the sites that inspired Van Gogh. I mean, why wouldn't you? So we went ahead and we went to Aral, and it was a lovely time to walk around, see lots of scenes. We wound up staying a lot later. We had dinner reservations in Avignon. However, we could not miss the opportunity to stay and wait for sunset to get some photos at the very place where Van Gogh painted one of his Starry Night paintings. It's like, okay, let's just call the restaurant and tell them that we're running late. We'll stay and see the sunset and take some pictures. So we did. We found the exact spot, and I pulled up the picture of the painting on my phone so we could try to line it up just right. And we waited and we took some photos, and it was lovely. And then we got back to our car and we headed back. Well, the one thing that I said when we rented the car is like, yes, that sounds like a great idea, but we're going to have to park in that one parking lot because I am not going to drive this vehicle in Avignon. It's ridiculous. The streets are really narrow. The last stop that we made in Aral was at a little deli. We had a little snack, and David said, hey, I would like to have a glass of wine. Do you mind driving back? And I said, no, go ahead. Go ahead. So he had a glass of wine. That made me the designated driver. No problem. So we head back for Avignon, and we're tourists. We're trying to figure out the signs. We turn into the road that I thought was going to take us to the parking structure. I was wrong. We wound up in those teeny tiny narrow streets. I mean, they're barely a car wide. Like if somebody was walking down the street at the same time, I'm not sure they could squeeze between the car and a straight up ancient brick building on either side of you. So starting to freak out. We're checking out the GPS as much as we can. We take this road. It's like, okay, yes, this will be fine. We're going to take this tiny little narrow road. I'm like white knuckling it, try to drive down this. I'm terrified. I'm going to crash into one of these ancient walls and damage something. We go up this road and we get to the end, and it turns out that they're doing construction. So the whole end of it is blocked off. There's nowhere to turn. I had to back up the equivalent of two blocks between this teeny tiny little narrow walls on either side. I'm backing up. Like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. So we back up. I'm like, okay, we're going to take this road. So I take that road, only we get to the end of that, and there's a slightly larger area, but it's like, it's a locked gate on one side. And then there's a super sharp right turn and a few parking places. It's like, oh God, okay. Well, you know, it's obviously one way. I can't go back the way I came. All right. So we'll take the right turn. And we drive down this, it's like about a block of, again, super narrow street with walls on either side. We get to the very end, and it's like a T intersection that's completely blind, because it's one teeny tiny little narrow road that goes into another teeny tiny little narrow road, and it forms an exact T. And I get to the end. I don't know how to turn. I mean, we're just like tight in there. And as we get there, there's a Frenchman headed our direction, trying to get on the tiny little narrow walkway beside the car. And I rolled down the window. I'm like, I don't speak French, trying to explain to him that I don't know which way to go, trying to use some of my Spanish because I speak Spanish. I don't speak French. The sweet, sweet man basically directed us how to turn and back up and turn. And I did like a 15-point turn to get down and turn right into this teeny tiny other narrow little road. So we take it. I'm thinking, okay, all right, we're going to make it onto the highway. We can find the parking spot. It's going to be fine. We get to the end of that road. We take a right. We're looping around. We're trying to figure it out. And we wound up in the exact same spot by the locked gate and by these cars, that's parked cars. And it was like, I was about ready to cry at this point. It's like, I don't know if we're ever going to get out of here. I don't know. We're stuck. But there was another very nice Frenchman who had just gotten out of a vehicle. And he's like, oh, I live right here. This is my parking space. Because there was somebody behind us at this point. And he's like, just pull in. So we pull into the parking spot, wait for the other person to get out of the way. And he said that he would help direct us. And he basically had us turn around in this the small area. It was easier to turn around there than the last time, but we turn around and he basically sent us out the way that we came, which was not a one-way street. So I didn't even know how they deal with it when they come like face to face with another vehicle. Somebody has to back up, I guess. And we finally get out of there and he explained as best he could to, okay, you're going to take a right and then you're going to take a left. So he directed us how we were going to get out of there. We finally got out of the city walls, got into the parking place. We were lost in that maze for 45 minutes trying to just navigate our way out of the city. And we finally showed up at our reservation about 15 minutes late, which in France doesn't really matter. And I had them pour me one of the stiffest double drinks I think I've had in a long time. It was a fabulous meal, well worth getting there in time for dinner. But again, not exactly the journey that we had planned to take when we headed out that morning. I have to say, when I find myself in crazy situations and when you're in the midst of it, it feels like you just aren't going to get out or it's just the biggest disaster ever. I like to remind myself, if we survive this, it's going to make a really good story one day. I hope that you enjoyed the stories of some of my weirder journeys and adventures. Who knows what wonderful and unexpected things we have in store for you next time. That's going to end the pod for today. Thank you so much for joining us for Unpacking Life's Crazy. Please like and subscribe to be notified when a new pod drops. And as always, if you're interested in learning more about this podcast, please visit my website, esperanzaphoenix.com. Last but not least, I would like to offer a special thanks to Chelsea Wild, the talented musician who composed the theme music for this pod. To find more of her wonderful original music, you can look her up on Instagram at minor.birds or visit minorbirds.info. That's minorbirds.info. Thank you so much for listening to the pod today. We hope you'll listen next time. Have a wonderful day and enjoy the journey.